Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode here at The Damage Report. I am John Iadarola, very lucky to be joined on today's show, which is going to be a very like chock full of foreign policy sort of show. Very lucky to be joined once again by Yasmin Aliakhan. Yasmin, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Always a pleasure to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. Now, we know from past conversations and your own independent work, which we'll get to in one sec, that you're very interested in making sure that people understand what's going on around the globe. So we wanted to make sure that we had stuff to talk about. So we laid the groundwork for what's going on in Ukraine a couple months back, and it is mostly rolled out as we hoped, just to provide you with an avenue for commentary. So I hope you appreciate that.
I do appreciate all the efforts made months in advance. Thank you.
Exactly. Before we launch into our stories, and thank you to everybody for joining us on this fine morning in which I'm not in a horrible mood. Can you tell everyone about your work?
Yeah, my work. I have a podcast called Global Thread. And on that podcast, I talk a lot about international issues. So things that don't get a whole lot of coverage in the US, things that are still going on, things that still affect us here in the US. So kind of dive into the history, how we got there, where we're going, what it can mean for the people who are actually living through these situations. And I just recently started doing videos with Rebel HQ. So you can check me out there too.
Yeah. Rebel HQ contributor, Yasmin. How exciting is that? So that's very cool.
It's pretty fun, yeah.
And so of course we're gonna be talking about Ukraine and Russia and blah, 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 all that stuff. That will definitely happen. We also, a little bit later on the show, will be giving you a meanwhile in interesting, fascinating news from South America and Asia and a whole bunch of stuff. So you're definitely gonna want to stay tuned for that. We've got Chonky Bears. You've been asking for it. We've got Chonky Bears. And interesting studies about things like the supposed opposition to vaccine mandates, as well as stand your ground. So we're gonna be jumping all over the place and all over the globe. So I hope that you've prepared yourself. Hold on to your butts as we launch into this. But before, actually, I need your hands free for just a sec. Hit the like button, share the stream, then hold on to your butts. Okay, and with that said, Yasmin, are you ready to do this?
I'm ready when you are.
I'm gonna do it. I'm not ready. Before we jump on our first story, though, I do want to let people know. Actually, there was just a message on tweet about this. So the murderers of Ahmaud Arbery have been found guilty on all counts in their trial, including hate crimes charges. So that is good. And I will say again, the murderers of Ahmaud Arbery. I know that we like to like politicize who gets to say the word murder and all that recently. Anyway, I'm sure we'll be talking about that more on the main show. But anyway, so that is good news. Good to see that. And with that said, let's jump into this.
Is this, as you see it, as the White House sees it, an invasion?
Look, Brianna, we think this is, yes, the beginning of an invasion, Russia's latest invasion into Ukraine. And you're already seeing the beginning of our response.
Okay, so there you have it. The White House Principal Deputy National Security Advisor John Finer says it's an invasion, referring to the developments of the last 24 hours or so, which we will go into. Bear in mind that this is an evolution from yesterday when the Biden administration had avoided using the term invasion, but they don't avoid it now. John Finer goes on to say an invasion is an invasion, and that is what is underway. So what are they referring to there? Well, US officials are denouncing Russian President Vladimir Putin's decision to recognize two breakaway republics, Donetsk and Luhansk, in eastern Ukraine as independent areas. And then we'll send Russian troops there for peacekeeping operations in the regions. So that is what they are saying is effectively, with a little bit of rhetorical cover, an invasion of portions of disputed Ukrainian territory. So we're gonna get into a lot more of the consequences of this, but Yasmin, first of all, were you surprised by Putin's move yesterday? What do you think about it?
Not really surprised, but first I do wanna commend you on your pronunciation of these Ukrainian districts. That was pretty good.
Thank you, I tried.
What's interesting about a lot of what's happening too is the rhetoric that's involved with it. You know, calling something an invasion versus a not invasion, and Putin saying this is a peacekeeping mission versus what it actually looks like to the international community, specifically the US and the NATO participating countries. I'm not really surprised that it has happened. He had to really have done something. You know, he's been moving his troops over to the border for months, since almost a year, I think, since last year. So for him to just retreat, I think would have been unreasonable for anyone to expect.
Yeah, well, look, I think that there would have been domestic political repercussions. I would have found it. I would have been able to find a way to find it reasonable were he to not invade a country.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons why he shouldn't do what he seems like he's about to do, but it seems like he's going to do it anyway.
Yeah. So look, he's going to continue to say, Vladimir Putin is never going to like stand on a massive stage with huge flags behind him and say, "Let the invasion commence." That's not how that works. By the way, that's not how the US goes about invading countries when we periodically do so. They're of course going to lay sort of the mythological groundwork for it, which they've been doing for some time in Russian state media about how it really is a part of us and like they really would be better off if they were to have us. And then making it about the eventual potential someday membership to NATO, which is in no, it has no, like there's nothing about now that makes it justifiable to invade based on the like the vague fears that someday, there's nothing happening now about them getting into NATO. So look, there's a lot of BS. We've experienced this as Americans before, generally being told to us by our own government. And there's plenty of misinformation in this situation coming from our own government. But let's just be very clear about what is happening. This is at the very least an invasion of those territories that potentially could be the springboard for invasions into other territories. And I will say in advance, because already this morning on Twitter, I've been told multiple times that I'm a warmonger. Couldn't be clearer that I'm against the war. Don't understand what that's a reference to. And I will say that all these people making these comments on Twitter seem to be big followers of so-called anti-imperialists that very much are in favor of this exact invasion happening right now. So there's a lot of irony going around on social media. Let me be clear, pointlessly, because it'll never be acknowledged, I don't want this war or any war. Let's be very clear about that. I'm an actual anti-imperialist, not just opposed to American imperialism. So anyway, I don't want to drag you into all that, Yasmin. That is my weird social media crux that I have to bear. But I will say, and I want to get your response to this, Biden has ordered new sanctions on those disputed territories. So what does that mean? Well, there can be no new investments in the regions of Donetsk and Luhansk by US citizens. So that is going, I'm gonna have to fundamentally change my investment strategy for the next year or so. Importing goods from the regions into the US can't happen. Exporting goods to the regions from the US or by any US citizen can't happen. Look, I'm making light of my own point of view. Obviously, this is significant. Germany also, by the way, halted the approval of gas pipeline Nord Stream 2, which is a very significant $11 billion pipeline, would potentially double the flow of Russian gas into Germany. So that certainly seems significant, Yasmin. What do you think?
There's a lot going on here with these sanctions. So the sanctions were hopefully going to be the thing that prevented Putin from doing anything that we didn't want him to do, right? He's had a lot of sanctions levied against him since 2014 when he first invaded Crimea. Those sanctions have done a lot of damage to the Russian economy, but they're saying now if he invades any further that they would have more sanctions on the energy sector of Russia. And that could actually be crippling because most of Russia's revenue and their economy is propped up almost entirely by their oil and gas industry, by their natural gas, right? They export to to Western Europe. They get a lot of revenue from that. And Western Europe in turn is dependent on Russian oil and gas. So there's a lot going on there. The previous sanctions did not take energy into consideration. They're saying these new ones might or could, but there's another aspect to all this too, is Russia, they've kind of been throttling the gas that they've been delivering to Western Europe for a few months now. And what that's been doing is creating an artificial demand and boosting the price of natural gas and oil in Western Europe. And it's hitting different countries a lot worse than it is certain countries. Mm-hmm. What that means though, is that if Russia decided to completely cut off oil and gas to Western Europe, they could probably survive for a few months based on all the additional revenue that they've gotten from inflating the price for the past few months. So there's a lot going on, a lot to consider. The sanctions hopefully will do something, but Russia also expected these sanctions. They knew that they were coming. So it'll be interesting to see what their response is now to those.
Yeah, and I also, these particular new sanctions specifically on that region, I don't know in comparison to the bulk of the sanctions that had already been in place or had been threatened, this seems insignificant in comparison to that. I don't know for sure, but that would be my non-expert read. Stopping the pipeline could be significant. You do have to separate sort of like short or medium term consequences from long term consequences. I think long term, that is potentially more harmful to some of these oligarchs than in the short term. They're saying in response, we're just gonna cut the supply even more and drive up the price. Which, I mean, this is again, these are the sorts of things that were being threatened. Apparently, those on the Russian side have made the calculation that this is okay, that whatever other interests they're pursuing are more valuable to them. And it is always a little bit weird when you talk about sanctions designed to hurt these like mega multimillionaires and billionaires. Like it's gonna hurt them, but in such a abstract fashion. Putin is going to still be the most wealthy person arguably on the planet afterward. Like sure, they do have dragon sickness. They would love for those fake numbers that don't mean anything to have more zeros at the end. But it's also like the sanctions always end up hurting the people at the bottom more. These are kind of targeted towards oil and gas, maybe not as much in this case, but it's like the first quasi diplomatic economic tool that's used. And it's one that just always seems so abstract in the way that it would affect the actual decision makers in international situations like this.
Yeah, and that's a great point. And it's not beyond reasonable doubt to think that Putin really maybe doesn't care very much how this affects the people of Russia right now immediately. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing in parts of Europe already is the people are suffering because of what Russia is doing with the gas. And particularly in Germany, I was reading an article, I think it was in the New York Times actually, they were saying that a lot of the people there, they simply can't afford their energy costs anymore, their energy bills. People are having to sacrifice on food and personal care items because they need to afford their energy. And this is in the middle of winter. I think, you know, you and I can probably forget that because we're in Texas and Los Angeles, but it's winter in Europe right now. Mm-hmm. And people are having to burn like actual wood in their fireplaces. And I don't know about you, but I don't have a wood burning stove in my house. Mm-hmm. I have a gas fireplace right now, but I have a remote control to turn it on. So if the power goes out, I can't even get like a fire in my fireplace.
Or if the batteries go out in the remote control.
Yeah. So it's very problematic. And I think the bigger issue here is that people are beginning to realize how monopolistic these state-run services that we rely on to live our lives are. And it's a little scary because we don't really have any other options to get things like energy, things like oil and gas to power our homes without, you know, if Russia decides to cut it off, what are we going to do?
Yeah, and of course, look, my response would be, and this is not in any way helpful to the situation right now, but long term, add this to the list of reasons that we need to transfer over to, you know, renewable energy. It's gonna be very hard in 100 years to cut off someone's access to wind and solar. I mean, it can be done, but it would take a really big umbrella. So
we're starting to see that in parts of Europe, we are starting to see people installing more solar panels and things like that. But you know, solar panels are also expensive up front. Yep,
they are, which is why that's the sort of thing that definitely both at the sort of industry level as well as the individual consumer level is going to require a good bit of government subsidies to get us along the way.
Especially
like that is what subsidies are supposed to be for. Industries that are still in sort of their young phase. The fact that we're still subsidizing oil and gas when they've been around for so long is obviously ridiculous. In any event, I did want to acknowledge the response to these developments coming from Volodymyr Zelensky, who said that the country is not afraid and will not concede anything to anyone, which is the sort of thing you would want your president to say, whether it is true or not, perhaps even more so if it's not. It is obviously very scary for a lot of people. And by the way, it's not to say that there aren't any people in these these rebel held territories that aren't in favor of this. I mean, obviously there are some. I'm not an expert. I don't know what it breaks down in terms of the polling or whatever, but there are a lot of people that are also very scared about what the potential next steps could be. And the next steps might come in a week, but those territories have been fought over for a number of years at this point. Like it is possible that there could be an expansion of these territories, further invasions that happen in a week, but it could also happen in 5 years. I would be very worried about the future if I was living in that area.
Yeah, and I did see something that potentially the US would prefer if Russia invaded now, because if they do it now, we can just get it over with, as opposed to if they don't, then they could do it anytime at any point. So Vladimir Putin has always been pretty vocal about the fact that he always considered Russia or Ukraine a part of Russia. Mm-hmm. And he was pretty upset that it's its own country, and he's saying they're not supposed to be, which is similar rhetoric that we've heard before,
yeah,
with other authoritarians who have justified invading other countries.
Exactly.
I won't say who.
100%. Yeah. I mean, look, sometimes they will just say it's, you know, I need buffer space. Sometimes it's for national security reasons. And those sorts of arguments have been used by Russia in this case as well. Sometimes it's no, but they're true us. It's truly like these are our people. And sometimes they will send people into the region to later justify using that sort of myth making. Yeah. In any event, very briefly, you're going to hear a lot about this as the situation develops. And in our top 10 list that we did yesterday, we were responding to Robert Reich's 10 reasons to have hope for the midterms. One of them was if this conflict does develop, as obviously horrific as that is for a number of reasons, hey, maybe from Biden's point of view, everyone will rally around the flag. And I know some people have thought that might be why Biden is, I don't know, like, they see it as like trying to start a fight there. I see, like, I don't see that. I see he wants to spend a ton of money, but not fight. If you believe that there will be a rallying around the flag that will bring us all together and accomplish the unity that Biden long ago promised, let's turn now to the response. When it was announced that Putin was going to be recognizing these two areas of Ukraine as independent and sending peacekeeping troops in, the right had something to say. Fox News jumped on it with Jesse Waters blaming Bill Clinton for the Russian invasion, saying if he had just let the Ukrainians keep the nukes, it wouldn't have happened, which maybe. I mean, there is such a thing as a nuclear deterrent. There are also other considerations, though. So let's just add a little bit of context to that. Ukraine is now a conventional weapons state. They don't have these weapons of mass destruction, which surrendered its large arsenal of nuclear weapons to Russia back in 1994 following the breakup of the Soviet Union and its declaration of independence. The historic disarmament came as Ukraine was politically unstable. So yes, decades later, sure, there is a benefit of nuclear weapons. Obviously, it comes at a massive cost in terms of the potential for an escalation of war to horrific extents. There's also a massive economic cost to maintaining a nuclear arsenal. But also, they had no idea at the time what could end up happening in Ukraine, or which sort of insane person could rise to power, and what could then happen to those nuclear weapons. So a little bit of historical context, Jesse Waters, I know that that's not what you're paid for, but maybe consider the past a little bit.
You know what else is interesting? If you want to blame it on anyone, and I'm not trying, like, for the record, I'm not trying to finger point, but John, do you remember why Trump was impeached the first time? It was because he refused to give aid to Ukraine. So he kind of set the stage for Putin to move in and do what he's been doing. So if you really want to finger point, I would say that's the more relevant direction to point your finger in. It's probably closer to Trump, but
there will be more finger pointing. He says they're sitting ducks for Putin because they lost their nukes. Well, I mean, to be fair, it did take Putin a little while. Anyway, it also demanded that President Joe Biden, quote, come out without a mask and explain why Ukraine impacts his country. So first of all, just to really easily clarify how serious of an individual this is, the throwing in come in without a mask. This is a child who somebody threw a cheap suit on and then puts in front of a camera. That's all that Jesse Waters is. And again, the explain why Ukraine impacts his country. Look, here's the thing. I don't think for most Americans, they are or should be constantly worried all day long about what happens in Ukraine or in most countries. I think that we do live in a community of humans, and so we should be worried collectively about what happens. But understand that when he says that, he's not saying we should put this a little bit lower on the priority list. What Fox News is saying, and you see this coming across on so many cases, is stop caring about them. shut up and accept what we are totally fine with happening, which is the invasion. This is a justification for the invasion that you're seeing every day on Fox News.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what is also kind of jarring about the whole thing is it just downplaying the whole crisis, right? This is a potentially nuclear situation that we're dealing with. Also, as a unifying aspect of, like, the American people are not going to unify over Ukraine and Russia because it's not anything that we really understand to that level, I don't think, collectively, nationally. And we're so divided right now. And you have people on Fox News talking about mask mandates and just wearing a mask in general, not even a mandate, right? Just wearing a mask. And why is that even a part of this conversation? You know, there's two very different levels of priority and importance here, and it's being downplayed to the point that it's just outright dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so that's one direction that they've gone, and you also have Emily Campagno on the Five says she's ashamed that Joe Biden is president as Russia sends troops in Ukraine. It breaks my heart, she says. The blame lies squarely in the shoulders of obviously Putin. Well, thank you for acknowledging that. But also Biden. We have a perceived commander in chief who has spent all of his time in office manufacturing a narrative about perceived erosion. Don't use perceived twice like that. That's amateur stuff. About perceived erosion of voting rights and of taking direction from teachers unions and the CDC for masking kits. That's what our president has been focused on. Look, this is just what they do. Just what are we talking about? Ukraine? Okay, how can I tie it back to like CRT and trans athletes and Fauci? What does any of this have to do with anything? If you want to criticize him in general as being weak or whatever, fine, do that. I would then challenge Emily Campagno and the rest of the Five to say what they would want Trump to be doing right now were he still president. Because they just want to imply, well, clearly Putin would have never made this move if the strong alpha male Donald Trump was president. Well, let's say that he was, and let's say that Putin was going to move in. What should Trump do to stop it? By the way, I acknowledge that's a very difficult question to answer. I have no idea. I don't know what Biden should have done to have stopped this. But they're implying that the answer is obvious. So obvious, in fact, that we don't need to pause to actually answer it. And so, yeah, like there's no like rallying around the flag at whatever cost. They're going to attack him. They're going to spend yet more years implying that Putin is so strong and virile. He's so awesome. Why can't we have someone like that? Whatever. It's just the whole thing is sickening to me.
And in the past, we used to be able to rely on that kind of rallying energy whenever the United States was going to war. But this one isn't personal enough for Americans, I don't think, for that to be a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, that rallying around the flag, I would say much of the time, if not the vast majority of the time, has resulted in horrific things being done around the globe or even inside of the territory of the United States.
So yeah, it's just form of nationalism.
Yeah, exactly. It's designed to shut down your thought process. So much of what's being said about this is designed to shut down your thought process. Most of it coming from people who, like me, don't have a great deal of knowledge about this area of the world or its history. So I use that as the launching point for coming at the topic with some degree of humility, not believing that I have all of the answers. Other people are not burdened by that predisposition. Anyway, really fast, to add on to what Jesse Waters has been saying about like nobody should care what happens there. Tucker Carlson in his show yesterday said, so today we sent another letter to Vladimir Putin asking for an interview. We hope we get it. We also sent a message to the president of Ukraine, who technically also has an answer, but Tucker Carlson has a name, but Tucker Carlson can't be bothered to know it. We would like that interview too. Now, neither one of these men runs a democracy by traditional American standards. Both of them are tyrants, but they're in the news and we would love to talk to them. An interview is hardly an endorsement. So all of that is designed to make him seem like, no, I'm just objective. I just want to talk to everyone. But the actual message of that was, they both suck. They equally suck. You should not care about one more than the other. They're all dictators. Everyone is a dictator. So whatever they do, even if it's secretly what I want them to do, is fine. And you shouldn't be bothered by it at all.
I don't know what Tucker Carlson does or why he does any of what he does. But Sure, maybe he'll get an interview with Vladimir Putin or Zelensky. That'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. We'll see what he does with, like, what would he even ask them? That would be interesting to see.
I don't know. Yeah. I would prefer that he would do that rather than talk about members of the squad, honestly. In any event, that is the current state of things. We will see how things develop, when these peacekeeping troops will move in, what Biden might do in response. I'm gonna pointlessly end the segment again by reminding the trolls and the haters not interested in war remotely. That's obvious. You can't watch 10 seconds of the show without coming away with that conclusion, but they haven't watched 10 seconds of the show, so they're not seeing this either. Anyway, with all that said, we're gonna go to our first break. When we come back, an epic return to Fox News. One of their hosts had a terrible bout of COVID and is coming back and talking about it, as well as vaccine mandates. People are against them, right? Well, it turns out it depends. We'll break it down after this. Kami says, John, you need wireless iPods. No, that's what I'm saying. I can't get to connect. Anyway. Let's talk about some news, some more stuff that's gonna put us in an even better mood. Let's watch this video.
I did get COVID again, but a far, far more serious strand, what doctors call COVID pneumonia. It landed me in intensive care for quite a while, and it really was touch and go. Some of you wanted to put me out of my misery, darn near got what you wished for. So sorry to disappoint you, but no, the vaccine didn't cause that.
Okay, so Neil Cavuto is back, everyone. You can stop your Cavuto watch every day wondering when he'll return. He's been gone since January 10th or so. Anyway, why does this matter? Well, it doesn't really, but it matters a little bit in that he is one of the personalities on Fox News who, although I will probably disagree with virtually everything he's ever said, he does encourage people to get vaccinated. And that has resulted in, as you might have gathered from his video there, death threats and wishes for him to succumb to COVID from Fox News viewers. They are so angry at him for having suggested they get vaccinated that they're hoping the man dies. This man who agrees with virtually every policy, if they were to stop and think about policy, he would agree with them. They want him to die, Yasmin, and he has so far refused to do so.
I mean, the ease with which people just issue death threats or death wishes on people is so crazy to me. I would never, like, I don't know, I don't care who it is. I would never say I wish that person would die. That seems like such an inhumane thing to ask for. And I don't know if it's just a separation because of social media and like they're not real people if they're on the news or they're on TV, but still, my God,
yeah,
it's a lot. Yeah,
I mean, that's what it feels like. People love wishing death on others. It's a great society that we've developed. But in any event, he did have more to say. He's not going as hard in terms of pushing vaccination in this video as he has in some cases in the past. But here is his continued commentary about his return.
That grassy knoll theory has come up a lot. My very compromised immune system did. Because I've had cancer and right now I have multiple sclerosis, I'm among the vulnerable 3%ers or so of the population that cannot sustain the full benefits of a vaccine. In other words, it simply doesn't last. But let me be clear. Doctors say had I not been vaccinated at all, I wouldn't be here. It provided some defense, but that is still better than no defense. No matter, I'm not here to debate vaccinations for you. Just offer an explanation for me.
Exactly. And look, we live in a ridiculous world where every right winger who comes into that video thinking, I don't want to, nor will I ever take the vaccine. We'll look at his situation. He's literally saying, I went through hell and all I want is for you to not have the same sort of horrific experience where you worry for weeks at a time that you might die at any moment. And they will respond with rage at that and absolutely hate it. We live in a crazy
world. It's also so frustrating that he has to justify why he wanted to get, like he had to list his health issues, his health history with his viewers. And what is this, 2022 now? We're 2 years into this thing, if not more, because we knew about it from before. Why are we still having these conversations? It's so exhausting.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, so this you might think, if you've been watching this show for a while, that this is the latest in a genre of videos that we've done since early on, where we're like, you know, going out of our way to give credit to right wingers, thinking, hey, maybe now they will get through to some people. No, I'm done with that. I'm still giving them credit. I just have no belief whatsoever that it'll influence even a single person. It should, but we are so far beyond that. There was a time where I used to think there's some way we can frame this, some persuasive tactic we can use, some celebrity endorsement or right winger that they trust, who if only they will tell people to get vaccinated, it'll work. Nope.
Trump that feels like more matter. Optimism from you than I think I would expect. So,
oh, but it's been burned out of me.
Yeah, it's gone. It's gone. Yeah. 2020, everything's gone. No more optimism. Exactly. We're not allowed to have any. We're not allowed to hope anymore.
In this economy, no, can't afford it.
That's so sad what I just said. There's no hope. There's always hope, for the record. There's always hope. I think I'm actually an optimistic person. So, for the record. Yeah.
You do seem so. Now I'm done with it. I spend too much time on Twitter for that sort of thing. But anyway, I'll also remind, if you're a conservative and you're watching this, I will remind you again, there's no chance this will persuade you, even though it 100% should. Fox Corporation, the owner of Fox News, told employees on Friday, this is December 2021, that those working in New York City would have to show proof they'd had at least one dose of the COVID vaccine by December 27th, removing the option to get tested weekly instead. Here's the funny thing. I had missed that news back in December. You remember for months and months and months where we would sort of jokingly, gleefully point out that every single one of the Fox people talking about how mandates are fundamentally un-American was under a mandate that was exactly the same as what Biden had proposed, that you either get vaccinated or you get tested. And then some right wingers would say, well, yeah, but they could still get tested. Nope, not as of a couple months ago. They're vaccinated. Laura Ingraham, Jeanine Pirro, Sean Hannity, Tucker Carlson, all of those a-holes are vaccinated. So just bear that in mind. When they go on the air and tell you that you and your family should get sick and die, they're getting all the protection that they can. So have fun with that. And anyway, while we're talking about mandates, let's transition now into this. This desk is so wet. So wet. Does this happen to Don Lemon? Did Olbermann have to deal with this? This desk is soaked. Anyway, I'm so wet. I'm so wet right now. I can already tell that Ben Shapiro is getting angry at how wet this desk is. Anyway, with that, let's talk about mandates. Fox News spent a long time getting people to be fearful and suspicious of the vaccine, masking, social distancing, all that. But nothing more so than the opposition they have generated to mandates, the requirement that you should either have to get vaccinated for some reason with a certain job or to go to a certain place, or even just to wear a mask or get tested or whatever. In fact, over the course of last summer, 60% of their vaccine reports included anti-vax claims, according to a study. So they were really hammering people on that. And what do you know? It was actually a little bit successful. At one point, polls were showing that mandatory vaccination specifically in schools was 9 points underwater in terms of approval, 37% of the country favoring it, 46% opposing it. So that looks like very successful persuasion. And that basically is true, but I wanna nuance that a little bit because I saw some interesting stuff being posted by G. Elliot Morris, who said after getting very surprising poll results on school vaccine requirements yesterday, the folks at YouGov, a polling outfit, decided to run an extra set of questions with different wording on COVID-19, measles, mumps, rubella, and infectious disease in general. But what they did was they dropped the word mandate. And here's what they found. 71% of Americans think, quote, parents should be required to have their kids vaccinated against measles, mumps, and rubella. 58% required to vaccinate against infectious diseases. And 48%, a plurality, if not a majority, required to vaccinate against COVID-19. And so they're very much against mandates. When you call them mandates, when you have all of the substance and effect of a mandate without labeling it that, no, they think generally, yeah, you should be protected against disease, especially if you're gonna be sending your dirty diseased kid around my kids. And so I thought that was an interesting little finding, Yasmin.
It's so dumb is what it is. It's so dumb. And it, I think it just speaks to the fact that we hear things in the news and we just parrot them. We don't really think about what we're saying or what we even believe, you know? I think it was Cavuto who was saying that his opinion doesn't matter. The news matters. The people matter, which is ironic because he's on Fox. But it's true. I mean, that's not what should matter. And now we just have people who don't actually understand the things that are happening in the country. They don't understand the meaning behind the words that they are saying because they're just repeating what they've heard somebody else say. But functionally, I mean, there's been a lot of polling that shows that people, if you ask them about individual issues, as opposed to what are you, a Democrat or a Republican or a liberal or progressive, whatever, they actually agree much more than you would expect, like a lot more than you would expect on individual issues. But the minute that you conflate it with a party association or what you perceive to be some kind of restriction on your own life, that's when you get the variation.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. And that is why the way that you word things, the attachment that certain issues or stances have to a movement is so important. I mean, there's a reason that the right wants everything to be about, are you pro-Trump? Because that implies the connection to what he believes in or supports, but it's amorphous. The identity becomes more important than the actual issues that you support. It's also why we care so much about framing here. I mean, I was just criticizing John Oliver yesterday for using the term school choice, which is the right's preferred frame for the privatization of public schools. So anyway, just stuff to bear in mind. The way you talk about things, the word choice you use is incredibly important, even for things that have been so politicized like mandates. Okay, with that, we need to take our second break. I'm gonna try to dry off my mouth a little bit. When we come back, Rick Scott has got a proposal that should lead the right, according to him. We're gonna break it down after this. Okay, the water soaking my desk is getting colder somehow as time passes. That's fun. Anyway, with that, it's the same sort of way that Rachel Maddow comes out of breaks all the time. Anyway, with that, let's talk about some insanity and jump into this video.
All over the country, Fetterman is Bernie Sanders. And Cotton Lamb voted with Nancy Pelosi 93% of the time, so not much of a moderate. So if you look at these, all these candidates on the Democrat side, they've gone far left. They're Green New Deal, shut down fracking, you know, Medicare for all, open borders, defund the police, parents not involved in schools. That's where the Democrat Party is now. So it's bad for the country, but it's going to be great for us in November.
Exactly. And that is the read coming from crypts across America. Anyway, that's Rick Scott. He is a senator. So that's an indictment of America. Anyway, he's a Republican. And there in that video, he is trying to give you his insane biased idea of what all these Democratic candidates support. Some of which, by the way, sounds pretty good, but is not commonly what a lot of these candidates are supporting in terms of the Green New Deal and all that. A lot of it is just a fantasy that occurred to him. But what's interesting is that he recently came out with a proposal for how the GOP should campaign and how they should rule when they get back into power. And what he was saying about the left, what he wants you to believe the Democrats are like, is insane. This is insane, but I want to be clear. He wrote this, so we're going to get into it in one sec. But he tweeted out, "We won't stop the woke socialist crowd and turn this country around without a plan. I have an 11-point plan with 128 specific policy ideas to rescue America." I will grant him, there are 128 numbers. Many of them being declared specific policy proposals is a bit generous, but whatever. He says, "I'll warn you, this plan is not for the faint of heart. It will be ridiculed by the woke left, mocked by Washington insiders, and strike fear in the heart of some Republicans. At least I hope so. It's a start." So I'm only one of those three things, but I will do my job. I will mock it. The idea that like Liz Cheney is like faints when she sees it. Jesus, these people are so up their own asses. But anyway, Yasmin, why don't we get into a few of these things and see what we think about how he wants the right to brand itself. So he starts off, this is number one. "Our kids will say the Pledge of Allegiance, salute the flag, and learn that America is a great country. and choose the school that best fits them. Well, first of all, the kids don't choose the schools, you dummy. That's not even how your propaganda works, you idiot. Anyway,
I was wondering about that point. I read it. I was like, kids choose? Wait, what? I didn't even know what he was talking about.
I want to go to Montessori. That's not how it works. Anyway, by the way, it also goes on to say public schools will focus on the three R's, not indoctrinate children with critical race theory or any other political ideology. So let's be clear, there will be no political indoctrination. We're just gonna bash into their head that America's the best country ever. And if you don't love it, there's something wrong with you, buddy. Has
it, the man, fact that like both of those two statements are in the same document is ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. And aren't kids still saying this, the Pledge of Allegiance in schools? Did that ever stop? I don't know. I remember doing it. Yeah.
I did. I'm sure that they still do. It's creepy and cult-like, but it's the sort of propaganda that they like. They're not against propaganda. They're just against their insane idea of critical race theory propaganda that's not actually being taught. Anyway, there's another section, colorblind equality. So you know this one's gonna be fun. He says, ban the box. Government, well, that's not a new Ben Shapiro anti-female genital thing. This is specifically, government will not ask American citizens to disclose their race, ethnicity, or skin color on any government form. No government policy can be based on race or ethnicity, and our military will engage in zero diversity training, teachings on critical race theory, or any woke ideological indoctrination that divides our troops. Our fighting force must be completely united and completely colorblind. We will not even acknowledge the possibility that someone's a part of a different race or anything like that. I mean, that's what they're saying. Like, we are going to enforce ignorance. We won't understand any of these things. Whatever. It's just, it's.
There's definitely a better. They can come up with a better name for it than ban the box. I agree with you on that. Mm-hmm. You know, and personally, the box has been kind of a point of contention. Like, it's not a perfect system in that sense. Definitely. I remember when I was growing up in Connecticut in elementary school, I was considered white because there wasn't an Asian box, right? Mm-hmm. And then as the world got more progressive, there was an Asian box. But now I'm just like, am I really like an Asian? Because I'm very much a part of that diaspora. But that aside, while there can be improvements maybe on how we're doing this and how we're collecting data, it's erasure to say that that the world is colorblind. It's erasure to dismiss people's histories and where they come from and the values that are important to them. And also the economical and societal things that hold them back compared to other groups of people. So by saying we're colorblind, you're saying you don't acknowledge the struggle of all these different groups of people and you're not gonna do anything about it going forward. It's a problem.
Well, that is definitely what they're saying. 100%.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah. So first of all, they're not gonna do this, but if they did, guarantee they still find some way to gerrymander based on race. They will definitely have the data.
Of course,
in some form. Mm-hmm. The immigration section, we will secure our border, finish building the wall, and name it after President Donald Trump. These are very serious people. This is not just like a weird, wacky cult or anything. These are serious people.
Because is it not walls. A weird, wacky cult, John?
No, it is. I'm being sarcastic.
Is it not? Is it? It is.
We're going to build sarcasm and name it after me. But anyway, yes, no, it's ridiculous.
It's like idolatry too, you know? Yeah. Just, it's so weird.
By the way, following up from there, we're not going to indoctrinate people. We're not going to like teach them one ideology or another. Yeah. In their economy/growth section, he says, socialism will be treated as a foreign combatant, which aims to destroy our prosperity and freedom. What are you gonna waterboard an ideology? What does that even mean to declare it a foreign combatant? It definitely is authoritarian and scary, but I don't even know specifically what that means. So if somebody identifies as a socialist, you're gonna black bag them, send them to a black site? You're gonna torture them? I don't even understand what that is intended to mean, except it's supposed to reassure any conservative who reads that there will be persecution of so-called socialists.
I feel like it hurts my brain to try to make sense of these things because you kind of have to like do a good amount of gymnastics just to get into their own frame of mind. And it's insulting to everyone's intelligence, honestly.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to do any of this.
You want a perfect example of insulting to your intelligence? All federal legislation, we don't have a graphic for this. All federal legislation sunsets in 5 years. If a law is worth keeping, Congress can pass it again.
Oh my God, so dumb. So
they've passed like two laws in the last 2 years, but of course, like we're saying, hey, that's a dumb proposal because look at these consequences. I know that he knows the consequences. Mm-hmm. They don't want laws. They don't want the government. Again, you have to understand these are not two equal sides, the right and the left, that sees different problems or would fix them in different ways. They've already won. The government can only constrain them more at that point. They don't want any of that. They certainly don't want government legislation that spends money that might necessitate taxes. That's what all of this is about. Mm-hmm. But there's even scarier parts. So their section 9 is humans are born male and female. There are two genders, and to deny that is to deny science. No government forms will include questions about gender identity or sexual preference. That is not in any way what any science says about anything. Gender and sex are not the same thing. He knows that. He's pretending not to know that because he desperately wants to go back to the days when they could just demonize gay people, gay Americans. They don't feel that they can 100% freely do that. So the trans community just, they will never stop attacking them until we finally bludgeon them into stopping. But right now it's open season. Just
it's so weird to fight for your right to demonize a group of people who are literally not bothering you. You know, it's, you know, all of this is incredibly inefficient. All of this is incredibly inefficient, especially that 5-year sunset on the laws thing. It's like, yeah, we already have a very inefficient government. We're not known for government efficiency here. We're riddled with bureaucracy already. So all of this is just compounding on top of that. But I will give him credit for being a Republican who actually has a policy plan, because we haven't really seen a whole lot of that lately. So
yeah, that's true. I mean,
so look, good for him.
I guess theoretically making every law sunset, which you'd need a constitutional amendment to that anyway, that kind of is a specific policy. Finishing the wall is sort of a specific policy. A lot of this is super vague though.
Intentionally, anyway, so I would imagine.
Of course. And by the way, Mitch McConnell, he hates this. He already said he doesn't want them to run on any platform, just like in 2020. Which, by the way, how did that?
Oh yeah, I policy-free midterm campaign. That's what he said. Yeah.
We're rapidly running out of hours, so we need to jump into this last story. It's an important one.
Is it Hank?
No. We're gonna get to Hank soon. Don't worry. In America, we have a huge gun violence problem, and there's been a lot of laws passed that claim that they will cut down on that. Has it actually worked? Well, we want to go into a study. First of all, let's acknowledge some facts. Every year, more than 19,000 people in the US die from homicide, and most of these violent deaths are attributable to injuries sustained from firearms. Rates of homicide and firearm homicide are markedly higher in the US than any other high income country. That's even recently been going up. In 2020, there was a big jump there as well. Now, what we have seen over the past two decades or so is the implementation and spread of stand your ground laws. Between 2000 and 2016, a number of states have put these into effect. What they effectively do is they take away the common definition of self-defense to allow you to shoot first. If you feel scared enough, you can start shooting to kill. You do not have any sort of requirement to retreat or anything like that. It's become very common, by the way. Florida was the first in 2005, 23 states since then. So almost half of the country by states have put them into effect. So now there's been an analysis of what effect that has actually had on gun violence. 41 states were analyzed, including the 23 that enacted it during the study period. And what they found in this study was, and all of it's available online, you can read it, it was associated, stand your ground, with an 8 to 11% national increase in monthly rates of homicide and firearm homicide. State level increases were high as well, more than 10% in a number of southern states, 16 to 33% in the states of Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Louisiana, and Missouri. And by the way, to put it in world perspective, the increase following stand your ground is more than the gun violence in the rest of the Western world. So Yasmin, we're not super surprised by this, obviously, but what do you make of it?
I mean, this goes beyond castle doctrine, and all it does is it removes any threat of consequence that people might have for shooting somebody and killing them, you know? And the language is all so vague that there's no real way to enforce it or to regulate it or to determine how scared I was at this one particular moment in my life when I killed someone. You know, who's to say? And who is there to witness whether or not my life was actually under threat? And who determines that? You know, we can't really rely on the courts to do it for us, as we've seen in a whole lot of these other similar cases. You know, all these people who are just getting off with things because they felt a certain way. people feel a certain way about me all the time. You know, I can't control the way people feel about you, anybody, you know? Mm-hmm. And for that to be—
I apologize, we have to cut for the hour. We'll come back and talk about this for another minute or two, but everyone stick around. We got a lot more news to come after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.